morning again. I want to start off this morning by indulging for a minute memories of 1998. The summer after my freshman year of college in Nashville, and I came back to Defiance, the big metropolitan area that there is there. I spent my summer working at Bryan Custom Plastics in Bryan, Ohio. Kurt knows where Bryan is because he travels this lovely state, but most of you have no idea. There's nothing there. Everybody I knew pretty much growing up worked in a factory. Their parents worked in a factory. That was what there was to do. Several of you have worked in factories. Bryan Custom Plastics. It was a plastics factory with about 30 presses in it. And they would squeeze out plastic into these big molds, and they were all car parts. And as you walked down the shop, there was just one main aisle down the shop, the molds got bigger and bigger. So at the front of the shop were small molds for, like, when you get inside your car, there's a floorboard piece right on the edge of your floor. If you're driving like a late 90s car, I may have touched that piece. It might have my number in it, whatever it was back then. But as you walked all the way back to the end of the factory, there was these huge presses, and they would actually in one piece press out the back inside walls of Ford Explorers, you know, those big things. So on the one hand, you had people that were just working with these small pieces that were just kind of this big, and in the back, you'd have these guys that were pulling out these big, huge pieces, 4x6 pieces of plastic. And as the press pumped out the parts, what happens is, and I don't know how many of you worked in plastics factory, but I'm kind of an expert because I worked there for about 10 weeks. What happened is, you know, they'll squeeze the plastic into the mold, and then as they you know, cool down and they come out, there's where the mold wasn't quite tight, there's little bits of plastic that would squeeze through. It's called flashing, and so we'd have to take a utility knife and cut off all the flashing. You have to be careful. If you cut too deep, you'd ruin the piece. And a lot of times there was clips that you'd have to put in there. Now, surprisingly, I found that was not my life calling, and I decided that's probably not what I want to do. I was talking to Clark about this the other day, and he was like, was it fun? I was like, it was fun for like a week. And then you'd work with somebody doing that for 25 years, and you're like, that's probably not, you know, my dad's worked at GM for 40 years. I have no idea how you could do something over and over again for that long. But the mechanics of the presses would set the pace of the press as fast as they could squeeze out the workers to get the flashing done, because you'd have to pull the piece out. Sometimes it would come out robotically. You'd have to cut all the flashing around. A lot of times there'd be clips to put in it, and then you'd have to prepare it for shipping. And you had to do it as fast as you could because, of course, there was another one coming out because the presses were all automatic. And so everybody would complain about how fast they had the presses that day. And depending on how well the machine was working, there may be a lot of excess flashing, which means you had to sit there and cut off parts all over the place. And it was fun, like I said, for about an hour, and then you'd luckily shift over to another press or do something differently. So I did that for a summer and realized that college was kind of important and I probably should stick it out. You know, author Edward T. Hall says that most humans in the West kind of view life like working on those presses. It's like we're on an assembly line, and time is pumping out in different shape and size boxes. And we work as hard as we can do to fill those containers of time. So you have like really small ones, which are like hour long, right? Hour increments, and they're pumping out of the machine, and they never stop. Like there's nothing you can do to stop those machines. And just like when I was working in the plastics factory, if you had a piece with a lot of flashing on it, or if you screwed the clips up, or something happened to slow you down, guess what? There was another one coming, right? And then there would be another one coming. And you may set it aside to try to catch up, but once you got behind, you felt so stressed out and so overworked and so unhealthy, and you might get somebody to come help you out and bail you out. You may not. And that's how we tend to view time. Like it's on this conveyor belt, and they keep coming. Hour by hour, there are these small containers that we feel like we have to contribute and fill those containers with something. Like we can't just have empty hours pass by. And then there are the larger containers, like months and months come by, and they are a lot of times empty, and we feel like we have to put all we can do. We're already halfway through October, and we're like, oh my goodness, here's this container and the conveyor belt's moving and there's nothing I can do to stop it because November's going to be here. It's going to be Christmas in 2018 and I still remember the 90s. Like, how in the world is this happening so fast and there's nothing we can do to stop it? And you can look around and see how people like stress out about it. Like they're stressed out about it and there's this guilt inside of us. Hey, what'd you do yesterday? And it's like this cultural moral where if I say nothing, I'm going to be a worthless piece of human being. You know, I've got to say that I did something yesterday. As a matter of fact, let me just tell you I was busy. Like, that'll fill up everything. Oh, you were busy yesterday. Oh, we were all busy. What were you doing? Well, you have to tick through all these because we feel like there's these containers coming along and there's so much stuff that we're trying to put in them because we have to get something done. We have to accomplish something. And this is the way it's described in his book. The future comes at us all too quickly, and the most we can do is pick up the pace so that not one of those time bottles gets past us without putting at least something into it. Trying constantly. I mean, I'm kind of getting stressed out even thinking about it, right? Like you're like, well, your sermon's too long, and I've got stuff to do, and you're like, here we are, this moment we'll never have again, and you want to know how big this container is going to be that the sermon fits in today. Is it one of those big ones or one of the small ones? How does it fit? It's been a little while since we revisited our kind of overarching theme for the year. We're 3/4 of the way through now, and we've been focused on all these different words along the way. And I don't want us to miss the forest for the trees. I know that each way along the way, we've kind of been all over the place. We've talked about lots of different aspects of life. But they all kind of loosely fit into these four kind of core principles about being a family that's real and deep and part of something bigger. And the idea of being real is that we as a church are trying to put our arms around like real life stuff. Like not always just talk about these loose ideas and kind of this abstract notion of, that's important. But we like to talk about things that are real life. And so this morning we talk about time. And time is something that we all have to deal with. It's part of our lives. It's something that we deal with. And I think we don't often think about time in its relationship to our faith, in its relationship to what we do as Christians. And so this morning, we're going to wrestle a little bit with what we might be able to learn about time and what the Bible has to say about time. First thing I want you to do is look at the back of your hand. I know you were excited to do this, but just kind of stretch out your hand and look at your hand, especially if you older folks. Look at that hand and consider the back of that hand. That is the same hand that you learned to write in first grade, right? This is the same hand that you learned to write with. Now, if you're left-handed, it was this hand, right? But it was one of those hands. That's the same hand that Mike learned. He first picked his tools up to work on his first engine when he was 3 years old, right? Mike, that's the same hand, and yet you all know that it's not the same hand, right? Like, it's not. There's nothing in your entire body that's the same as it was when you were in first grade. Like, it's so weird to think about, but you know that through your biology classes that your cells are constantly reproducing and changing and dying, and that your body is a completely different organic cell or organism every, like, what, 3 or 4 years, 5 years? Like, totally different. And yet you know in your mind, this is the same hand. These are the same hands that I grew up with. They're bigger now than when I was a kid. And as you grow older, they're a little wrinklier than they used to be. There's some spots on them that didn't used to be there as your age spots appear. Maybe there's a scar on them somewhere reminding you of an accident or something stupid you did back then for the men that are in the crowd that seem to do that often. It's the same hand, it's the same scar. And yet you know that it's different because things are always changing. Even the things that we don't think are changing, they're always changing. And you can be kind of captivated by the idea that there's nothing you can do to stop it. Like you can have the best year of your life with your kids. Maybe they're 8, 10, 12. I don't know what's the best year. I know it's not teenagers, but it's sometime before that. But whatever it is, and you can wish to goodness that you could pause at that moment and just keep them there forever, or at least most of forever. But you know there's nothing you can do. You know, when they get to be 11 or 12, and you've worked with teenagers for a long time like I have, like you know what's around the corner. Like you just know, and there's nothing you can do to stop that. And then as you hit midlife, or as you get older, as we all are, there's a part of you that realizes there's nothing you can do to slow things down. We went to the show last night, Meet the Ballyards there, fancy meeting you there. The problem with the Ohio Theater is that when they built it, people were not as tall as I am. Toby, you've been there before. Like, that is not a comfortable place to sit at all. And we've been doing these shows for like 5 or 6 years, and my knees were about to die last night. They didn't used to do that. Like, they used to just be uncomfortable. Now I felt like I'm getting older. Like, there's nothing I can do. I step on the scale. I'm getting bigger, too, as a matter of fact. But I look in the mirror, I'm like, I don't look any different. People tell us all the time, your kids are getting bigger. No, they're not. They look kind of like they always did. But you know how that is. It's all changing at the same time. And it's like we're all on this long conveyor belt. One of the things I wanted to do this morning, I'm 38 years old. I have a perspective of time through 38 years. But some of you are much older than that. Some of you are somewhat younger than that. And I have a hankering to believe that your concept of time changes as you get older. Just seems to be the case. I look at things more differently now than I used to. I had Margaret. Margaret wasn't able to be here, but I asked Margaret. She's a few years older than I am. And so I said, Margaret, if you could just write down a couple thoughts about how time has changed, you know, in your lifetime as you look at things differently. So she wrote a couple notes down. Kathy, it's true Margaret fashion. They're kind of, must be something. It sounds like a note from your grandmother, Mary Beth. Like, it's all over the place. But it's, I think, a helpful insight into how time changes. First thing she wrote, like, I don't know why. The first thing in your mind is, there was no TV, underlined, exclamation mark. You think about how much time that you spend on television. There was no TV. There was none or not many people who had cars. So what I want you to do is think about, I mean, this is a different time, obviously, but think about how all these things impact the passing of time today. No television. Well, our kids don't watch TV that much because they have screens they carry around all the time, and so they watch TV kind of differently. We all have cars. Now most everybody has at least two cars. Think about how that changes your time, how much more time we spend in the car than Margaret did when she was young. And Hope, I'm going to lump you in with Margaret because you're close to the same age. And you're about the only other one that's close to Margaret, so. Very few had radios. There was no, I don't know, like I said, this is Margaret. There was no pasteurized milk. So that was one of the things she thought, wanted to share. Washing was done in a tub outside over fire. No dryers, clotheslines, we had no basements. Very little talking long distances. Not many fast food places. Think about how that changes our life. Crystal Lewis would have died a couple years ago without fast food, right? You think about it. Even when I was a kid, it wasn't nearly like it was now. We were talking now, you drive around and there's new restaurants all over the place. And see how that affects how we spend our time. And it's not good or bad, it's just different, thinking about how it changes. Girls played half-court basketball. After high school, she went to nursing school. Not as much emphasis. I don't know what that means. She talks about wars and weathers due to TV's public news. See, there weren't as many women working outside the home to World War II, obviously. Think about how that changes our ability to deal with time. Because most of us have, I'm looking around, almost everybody has folks at work. Women, men, mom, dad, everybody's working. One of the biggest changes is TV coverage, the internet, all that stuff. Medicine, think about how much more of our life is dominated by going to the doctor, by dealing with all the things that come along with that. And then she kind of summarized it and said, I find that I don't get as excited about things as I used to. I realize that God is in control to my mind and heart. So, some thoughts for Margaret. One of the things, some of you, I sent out a question. I'm curious. I want to give some folks some time to think about it. Some of you can just chime in on the spur of your moment. Thinking about how time changes as you get older, I want you to think, first of all, let's just do the hardest one first. 10 years from now, think about yourself 10 years from now. So I'm 38, I'll be 48. Where are you going to be in 10 years? Clementine, come here. I think you're about the youngest one in here. Come here. I'll give you time to think about it. It'll take forever. So how old are you now? So you'll be 20. What do you think life will be like when you're 20? You want to live in an apartment. All right. We got high aspirations at the Metz household. right, so you'd be in an apartment. What do you think you might be doing when you're 20? So you graduate high school and you're usually like, you'll be 18. You'll be 18 when you graduate. So it's like 2 years after you graduate high school. Everybody take notes. We got to figure out. You have a dog. So we have some issues at home with not having a dog. So that's like the first thing that's going to happen when she leaves is she's going to get a dog in an apartment. Okay. What do you think you'll be doing? Be a dancer or an artist? So who's paying for the apartment that you're living in? Because we all know how that goes, right? That's right. So good. All right, go away. We have to forecast a little bit further. So 20, we'll still be paying for. So this is going to impact how I see myself in 10 years. Oh, what about you? What about the Morrows? I sent you guys a note. So you guys are in a different stage of life than Clementine. 10 years from now, what are you guys doing? Eating bonbons somewhere? Retired? How many of you will be retired in 10 years, hopefully? Ballyards are ambitious, like we are. Dalton, you're not. You're going to be living in an apartment with Clementine, probably paying with your parents. All right, so you're retired. Any other things come to mind when you're like 10 years from now? Okay, so yeah, you start to get your 10-year window. If you have kids at home, you start thinking, well, what is it going to look like? If you're thinking about retiring and getting a little bit older, and all right, maybe it would be time to change houses. Anything else? I don't think we usually think 10 years ahead. Do we? I mean, I know financially planning wise and some of those things, but really, your life, when you think about yourself 10 years from now, like maybe 5 years, but 10 years just puts you into the next stage of life. And then there's probably some of you that are thinking, probably not going to be around in 10 years. And you have to come, like, it's funny because we don't like to talk about that, but the reality is that's part of our lives too, right? Be around in 10 years. Hope, do you think 10 years down the road? Do you think 10 years down the road, where are you going to be in 10 years? I knew Hope would not beat around the bush. That's why I ask it, right? You think about more. It's so different than Clementine, right? You go one from one extreme of the continuum of age to the other. Clementine's like, I have all this world in front of me. Kurt and Ruth are like, it's starting to get a little closer. We got to start thinking about how we're closing it out. And Hope's like, that's probably. How old would you be in 10 years? 105. We'll have a party for you. And we know that you're not looking ahead to 10 years. What about the Sowers? 10 years from now, you still have kids at home because it'll be forever. Nothing will change in 10 years. The kids will just be a little older. And Cleveland will have a 75-year streak of not winning or whatever it is by then. What about you, Jennifer? You just graduated college, so you're kind of... Yeah, what are you thinking 10 years? She's just out of college, so she still doesn't know what she's going to be. What do you think 10 years from now? Stability, right? Like 10 years would be a little more stable. I like it. Karhoff, where are you going to be in 10 years? Are you thinking like this has already been 10 years? Yeah, you kind of have that shift. And then what I hear from some of you whose kids are a little bit older, then you start shifting again to their kids or finding your own self a little bit. What about you guys, Lewis? This 10 years, your kids will be gone. That's right. GoFundMe will be set up right after the services today. That's what, I mean, the great part of being a church and intergenerationally is you keep each other in check. Like you can think what you want to of 10 years, but obviously None of us really know. What about Lucy? What about you back in the quarter? Where are you going to be in 10 years? Be old? Figuring out? Kurt and Jess, 10 years? What do you guys think? Your kids, yeah, you guys would kind of be where the sours are. what else do we ask? What about, think about waiting. It's just waiting in general. Clementine, do you like to wait? No. How long can you wait for something before you get like, kind of, yeah, I know you're going to say that. Something really good. Like if you know, like a vacation, like, or something really good that you're like, not very long. What about you guys, Morrows? You think you're able to wait a little bit more patiently as you get older? I mean, generally speaking, Kurt, you think? Yeah. And it, 5 years, is that a long time, Clementine? Not very long, Clementine's like, 5 years is forever. And you think about it, 5 years of your life is almost half your, it is half your life. 5 years is just 10% of your life. So you see how your perspective changes. But the challenging thing is all the meantime, you're changing, especially in those first 20 years where your body's changing, you're emotionally changing, everything else. And so you're trying to hold on to that perspective, but you know that you can't relate to Clementine, what you're saying, right? Like we can try and try and try, but there's just no way because you kind of got to go through it. And it's going through it is when you begin to develop that perspective a little bit. Yeah, and it's one of the things I was hoping to bring out by just sharing a little bit from each other. I mean, it's stuff that we kind of know, but just to hear each other. So I put Clementine on the spot. You know, if we all looked at the world like we were 10, like Kurt's financial portfolio would not be very good. Because at some point you have that, yeah, and it's not just experiential. There's physiological evidence that your brain changes. And, you know, when you're in the midst of your 20s and 30s, and when you're, like Jennifer says, just trying to find stability and some longevity, you're not thinking about 65. You're like, I got to figure this out, you know. And then if you find somebody, you start dating, and then you got to figure that whole world out. That kind of distracts you from that. And what do you say about this? You've been thinking about this. You just retired. Right. Christian? That's right. I try to impress it on our kids, whether it's Christmas or whatever they're excited about, is kind of coming from the old folks, right? Is just learning that, hey, the faster it gets here, the faster it's over. Like, it's a depressing thing to think about it that way, but what you learn, like Kurt said, you just learn from experience that just to enjoy the ride. Like, all of us have probably had crummy things where whatever it was we were excited about, it didn't pan out the way we thought it would be, and the waiting might have been the best part, like all that expectation. And we talk a lot about this during Advent, because I think so much of this translates into the Advent season of waiting for Christ and realizing that we're all waiting for something that will be worth it. And it's difficult sometimes to kind of keep that in perspective. So I think that's a good place to kind of pick up here for a few minutes. And to just reflect on how is it that we, because what I hear Kurt saying is just how do we maintain that perspective? Like, how do we maintain, because what you're saying is, you know, I look back at how I was always kind of anxious about the next stage of life, and I think all of us can relate to, I can't wait till I get my license. I can't wait till I can get my own car. I can't wait till I go to college. I can't wait till I get married. I can't wait till I have kids. And all of a sudden, all those things have happened. And you can kind of find yourself at a loss, like, what am I excited about now? What am I waiting for again? Okay, now it's time to retire, and there's kind of that lull. That's a little bit further in. But I think what we risk is always looking past the situation that we find ourselves in and not enjoying the ride kind of along the way. And I think more than anything, that's what the Bible kind of provides the perspective. And so we don't often think about the Bible's teaching a lot about time. I think it's easy to talk about these things because we're all drawing from our own experiences, and it's fun to kind of look at each other and kind of where we are in our life setting. The Bible doesn't, there's a couple different things we could say. First of all, there's a lot of proverbs about time. These aren't from the Bible, but we think about, you know, time marches on, time flies and you're having fun, time will tell, time is money. All of those things have an echo of truth. And the book of Proverbs provide similar kind of perspectives of time. Proverbs chapter 3 says, "My child, never forget the things I taught you. Store my commands in your heart. If you do this, you will live many years and your life will be satisfying." Kind of the good life. Proverbs 6:6-8 says, "Take a lesson from the ants, you lazy bones." I like these modern translations. "Learn from their ways and become wise. Though they have no prince or governor or ruler to make them work, they labor hard all summer gathering food for the winter." Goes back to, you know, preparing for the long haul. Proverbs 16:9 says, "We can make our plans, but the Lord determines our steps." It's kind of this reminder that God is in control. "Good planning and hard work lead to prosperity, but hasty shortcuts lead to poverty." Proverbs 21:5. Probably one of the more famous verses from Proverbs 27:1. "Do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what tomorrow may bring." These all sound fine and dandy, but it still kind of scratches the surface of this bigger topic that we're caught up in this time. I still picture us on this conveyor belt dealing with all these boxes of empty time and feeling the need to fill them with something important. And I think we need to begin by acknowledging and remembering that in the beginning, God created time. It was part of the fabric of creation. It wasn't an afterthought. It wasn't already existing. God created it. Genesis 1, there was evening, there was morning, day 1. There was evening, there was morning, day 2. There was a rhythm to our lives from the very beginning of creation built in by God. And it's interesting, you know the story, right? There was evening, there was morning, day 1, all the way to day 6. And then, of course, on day 7, Genesis 2:1, "Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array, but by the seventh day God had finished the work that he had been doing. And so on the seventh day he rested from all of his work. And then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy because it was on it that he rested from the work that he had done. Sabbath is connected to holiness. And you can't really talk about time without talking about Sabbath, because God builds in this need for rest into the concept of time. There is a weekly Sabbath. 6 days you work, 1 day you rest. But more than that, it was built into the overall calendar throughout the year, too. There was a Passover festival. There was an unleavened bread, Feast of Unleavened Bread. There was the Feast of First Fruits. There was Pentecost, the Day of Trumpets, or the Day of Atonement, and then the Tabernacles. And so even throughout the year, it wasn't just this rest on the on the seventh day to kind of keep your orientation, but as you go throughout the year, allow God to orient your sense of time. I've made this point before, but I think the organizing structures in our life seldom are our faith. Instead, we tend to follow sports calendars. That's what kind of organizes our faith. Like the spring is baseball season, and it bleeds, or basketball season, and it bleeds into baseball season, and it's fall, now it's football season. And that becomes kind of this orientation that we see the world through. Like, it sounds like I'm overstating it, but I don't think so. I think when you look at the way that the calendar flows for a lot of people, what season is it? Like, even more than the seasons of nature, we follow our sports calendars. Or maybe it's television, because, it's time for the new shows to be out on television. I know that, Netflix and things like that have changed that a little bit, but it's still kind of, the summer blockbuster movies, fall programming, the spring programming. It's just kind of this orientation that we follow. Or maybe if you have kids in school, your lives are dominated by your school calendars. I know ours is. You have the beginning of school, you have holidays. And of course, there's the nationalistic calendar that kind of dominates our lives. We go from President's Day to Memorial Day to Independence Day to Labor Day to the holiday break. And you see how our lives kind of sit in, and that just kind of becomes the way that we view the world. And I'm not saying these are right or wrong, but we just have to acknowledge that that's kind of the way that our bodies flow, our calendars work. Your heart is beating according to one of those calendars more probably. Or maybe it's at work, depending on what your work schedule is. The challenge that we face is how do we synchronize our lives to God? If we're not going to obey, or if we're not going to follow the Old Testament festivals, which is probably a discussion for another day, but if we're not going to do that, then how do we somehow, in the midst of all the stuff we've been talking about, how do we make sure that our lives are anchored in God's rhythm of life? Because I think it's very easy for any of those things to kind of pull us away and distract us. And I think that's one of the reasons why Sabbath is so important, and I think that's the place to begin. It's like the one commandment, right? There's 10 commandments. It's the one commandment that we always look at and go, that doesn't really relate to us anymore. And yet in a lot of ways, it's the centerpiece of the Old Testament law. I mean, their lives revolved around the Sabbath. 6 days you work, 1 day. That's every single work. Every single week there was a day to kind of orient your lives. In the midst of your busy agrarian lives, working out in the fields or working with your livestock, you spend a day and you just rest and you remember that God is in control. And I think it's very much related to what a lot of you shared this morning. It was what Margaret shared in her note. Just remembering that God is in control. I don't get as upset about things. Well, if we're always reminding ourselves of that, then it's going to be harder for us to go up and down emotionally based on whatever may be happening that day or that season. I think finding a practice of the Sabbath in our lives is essential. I think we need a weekly Sabbath, and I don't know that that means taking Sundays off and not doing anything, but it means protecting something, some part of our lives that's connected to holiness and to rest, where the purpose is to rest and to worship. And I think we do a good job of that for a couple hours when we're together on Sunday mornings, but it needs to be more than that. It also has to do with prayer. The other thing I think we need to be reminded of is that all of our celebrations are rooted in our faith in God. I mean, I think you can go to a Buckeyes game and not be a pagan worshiper, although some of us may be close sometimes. But if you remember that there's a reason to celebrate, and it's not because of a football game, it's because of what God has done in our lives, then that infuses a lot of our lives with celebration, and it roots it in the right place. There's even a Bible verse for that. Did you know that? Colossians chapter 2, verse 16 and 17. Therefore, do not let anyone judge you about what you eat or drink, or with what regard to a religious festival, a new moon celebration, or a Sabbath day. These are a shadow of the things that are to come. The reality, however, is found in Christ. It's being reminded, hey, you could celebrate on the 4th of July. Just be great. Just remember your Savior is not the country, it's Christ. You could be excited about a Buckeyes football game, but just be remembered that, or Marshall football game. Sorry, Chris, I'll try to bring you into this a little bit better. Yeah, sorry. That's right, yeah. But you just remember that your true source of joy is not found in those things. That those are just a dim reflection of what else is out there. Which means that you're not completely devastated and on the verge of killing yourselves if something goes wrong. Team loses, whatever it is. Because you realize, oh, this is just a shadow of things to come. That there's so much more to life than all of this. And I think maybe the last thing to be reminded of as we finish up is just to be reminded that God, in some kind of mysterious way, exists beyond time, outside of time. In Revelation chapter 1 and verse 8, when Jesus is talking and kind of through the revelation to John, that kind of famous exchange, I am the Alpha and the Omega, who is and who was and who is to come, the Almighty. It's a reminder that God is not limited by our constraints. God's not in his early 60s worried about his retirement. He's not 10 years old worrying about the rest of his life. Like somehow he exists beyond that. And what's beautiful, because we all know that there's issues that come all along that, right? Like it's not like Kurt and Ruth are finally, you've made it. Like you're beyond problems now in your life. Like you've been waiting all of your life to be in that moment and you finally realized it, right? There's just different problems. Some of them are more difficult than others, like middle school. I don't think any of us feel like that's probably the pinnacle of life. But they change and they evolve. And imagine having somebody, that's why we rely on those who are so much older than us for perspective. Imagine having somebody who's beyond old, right? Somebody who's able to just step outside of that. And he's offered us respite and care and comfort. And says, if you just rely on me, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. Just like, pick on Kurt again, but just like Kurt testified, and Margaret, I don't get as bothered by things as I used to be. It's because I've got some perspective now. And God is saying, hey, if you rely on me, I've got even more perspective. When you guys weren't even thinking about life, I've been busy taking care of the world, and it's going to be all right. And so I say that, and I think that the takeaway from this morning's message more than anything is that we probably shouldn't get too bothered by stuff. Probably shouldn't get too bothered by stuff. You know, most people who get all sucked into politics and are scared are usually younger people. Because the older folks are like, yeah, we've seen a lot of stuff in our lives. And it's been bad, and we've been through some bad times. And Margaret's like, hey, we used to wash our clothes out in a hot tub. Imagine that, Dalton. Survive that. And Margaret's like, we lived through it. We did okay. We're going to be all right. And I'm convinced that Christians, more than anything, that's got to be our message today. We're going to be okay. We're going to be all right. We serve a God that's bigger than all this stuff. We're going to be all right. Time's going to pass in our lives, and we're going to go somewhere else, and another generation's coming along the way, and God is still in charge, and God is still going to take care of us. And in a small, not so small way, when we sing these songs that we sing, we're really testifying to that. So I hope you'll internalize those words and remember that's the promise that God has made us. And so we're going to stand up and sing this song before we head out this morning.